from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the GoodAtheist.net podcast. My name is Jacob Fortan.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Now, you know, before we start the show, there's something I just want to say. You use Gmail, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay, how would you rate Gmail's ability to prevent spam from, to just get rid of spam email?
It was doing pretty well back when I was a normal human being, but then when I became a blogger and I got onto, like, everybody's press release list, then it started failing.
Well, here's my complaint. I don't know who did this, but I have to imagine this is an annoying Christian who signed me up to every imaginable fucking newsletter, Christian newsletter out there. And a couple of weeks ago is when it first happened. I wake up, I have like 150 emails, and it's from all these different organizations on this Christ Watch mailing list. And I have been doing everything I can to get off these, unsubscribing with their little unsubscribe button, which doesn't do shit, reporting them as spam, which doesn't do shit.
Wait, when you report these as spam, it doesn't... Because my understanding about spam and Google is that they're really good at getting those weird ones like, I jack Jill to be 4, buy boner pills to be N.
Right, you know? But the thing is...
But for actual... content and real stuff, it's a bit trickier.
Yeah, but you have to understand, it's not so much like I'm a lone person saying, hey, this is spam, right? But they may be sending to who knows how many, and most of them don't report them as being spam. So my tiny little, hey, this is fucking spam, doesn't necessarily flag them as spammers.
You know, just a quick tip that might help you and it might help other listeners. Gmail has a new feature called Priority Inbox, which is really cool, because Priority Inbox tells the difference between really important mail and just somewhat important mail. You know, it's that extra difference between now you got spam, semi-important, and really important. And it's fucking changed my life. It's made all the difference between getting 20 emails over the course of an afternoon and being able to see which two or three I really need to deal with.
Well, here's the deal. Probably most of the people listening out there scoff at the idea of saying, like, oh, I really don't need that, and it's not important. But you know what? We are being hit with so much fucking distraction online. You know, you have your email, you have your Facebook, you have Twitter. It's so noisy out there that you're spending a ludicrous amount of time probably filtering out a whole bunch of junk. So honestly, when it comes to stuff like that, figuring out how to learn to ignore most of what you're probably getting, that's where we're going to get to, that point. You just got to plan for it.
Well, you'd hope that it would be the kind of thing that maybe would get added into education or something, but won't. But won't.
Oh, you and your whole education thing. That whole system is dead.
Why would we?
There's
ever,
no hope.
Why would we ever teach kids how to organize their lives and get things done? That's stupid. Teach them Englishes and maths.
Well, you should probably teach those.
Yeah, I know, but I'm sticking with my opinion that the idea that they keep that through like all 13 grades. Like, just this, like, one of the core things, and we're just going to hammer it home for 13 years.
You want to shake up. Is that what you want?
I think that there's a whole bunch of things that people need to learn that they're not learning in school anymore.
That's a fucking good point. But before we move on, there was one thing that I wanted to mention from one of the sites, for one of these spammer guys. I followed the link, which I guess I regret now, but I went to this site called lightsource.com.
Well, what was the link? Were they like in joining you to feel the love of Jesus Christ?
No, it was more like a link to a video podcast, because I've been actually thinking about doing one, and I just really love to see what the quote-unquote competition is up to. I really want to know and try to understand how it is that preachers try to put through their crazy ass message. There are techniques, you know, there are ways that they do the things that they do. And as much as I loathe what they do, it is a serious mistake to underestimate these fucking people. You have to understand what they do in order to be able to just basically point out how crazy it is.
Sure.
One of the things that I really just, I guess I felt was the craziest thing, but I suppose to a religious person sounds absolutely normal, is one of the preacher guys is talking about how people need to start listening to God, And what that means specifically is that they need to start listening to the voices that are in their head. And his recommendation, if you didn't hear God, was that you were either not listening enough, because you're deaf, or your relationship with God isn't perfect. So you need to align yourself more with God, and then you're going to start hearing voices. Because he says that those voices are going to be telling you really important things. Things that you should be doing.
Is he just saying that in the same way of saying, like, listen to your inner conscience and let that be your guide? Or is it more like God will actually be like, Jacob?
Yeah, it's pretty much that. It's that God will speak to you directly, and he will tell you what to do.
Garbage day is tomorrow, Jacob. Don't forget the trash.
I don't know if it's that mundane. My only, you know...
That's what my brain tells me. That's
what
I hear.
Well, your brain is boring.
Tells me that the day after garbage day.
Oh, man, it's so bad. It's so bad. We always miss it. But what I was going to say, think of a situation like, let's just pull a random name out. Let's say Brian David Mitchell, right? The man who hears voices.
Okay.
That last episode, we talked about him. He's the guy who kidnapped Elizabeth Smart.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Calls himself Emmanuel. But he hears voices,
yes.
And they command him to do things, and they're quite clear what he's supposed to do. His problem is not that he was unclear about what needed to be done. The problem was that it was very fucking clear what needed to be done, and that was very scary. But that's my point. I mean, here you have a guy who says, listen to the voices in your head, and for sure, for most people, maybe it is as bland as Ryan's thoughts that he needs to take out the garbage a day too late. Maybe that's the voices that he hears. But you gotta wonder what kind of crazy voices some people actually hear. You know, the ones that are just like, I'm gonna listen, and I'm really gonna pay attention. You can have some pretty crazy individuals that feel absolutely convinced that they are talking to a supreme being. And meanwhile, they've just talked to themselves. Who knows what kind of messed up shit happened in their head? Who knows what kind of crazy justification they've created? Who knows what mad world they have in their own mind? But now they're being encouraged actively to listen to it.
To believe that what you're being told is the truth, when, you know, often your brain lies to you very straightforwardly.
It lies to you in a lot of different ways. You know what, there's a documentary that came out recently. It was about the brain. I'll post a link on in the notes of the show, which, by the way, for all of you listeners that were not bonus members, every show now has all the notes about the shows. That means all the links that I talk about, all the subjects, everything. If you go to the lyrics section right now, as you're listening to this, you're going to see all the notes.
The lyrics section of, like, if you have an iPhone,
right,
there's a lyrics section.
Yeah, you can go to the lyrics and see what the lyrics are for songs.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I pop in all my notes. So you can see all the URLs, everything that we talk about are in the notes now. It's a new value-added feature.
And it's also on the website.
Not yet, no.
Yeah, why don't you put that after the jump on the actual post when you post it up?
Because I kind of wanted to make them their own HTML pages. I have my own thing going on.
Okay, sure, fine.
It's in the notes, it's in the lyrics section. That's how most people listen to it anyways.
I'm excited.
It's a new feature.
Organization.
I know.
People will know what the hell the episodes are about before they check them out.
It's true. Well, it makes the summary of the shows a lot easier now. But regardless, there's this awesome new documentary on the brain that I just saw. It's from the BBC. And in it, there's a guy who's making a sound, ba, ba, ba. You can actually see, I think Unreasonable Faith had the same video up talking about this. But the crazy thing was, although he was making the sound, ba, 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 he was moving his lips like he was saying the F, like he was saying fa, fa, fa. And guess what your brain hears? It hears fa, fa, fa. You close your eyes, you'll hear ba, ba, ba again. You think it's an actual auditory hallucination, but it's really triggered by the way that your brain interprets sound that's coming in. That's how much it lies to you. It can't even get sound right. It's pretty fucked up, eh?
Yeah, and that's just one of those standard tricks. You don't even want to know what starts to go wrong when there are chemical imbalances or just some
sleep deprivation,
psychiatric issues. It's bad news.
It is bad news. Anyways, I thought it was kind of, kind of hilarious. Like I said, I was doing a little bit of research. But as soon as I watch one of these videos for 5 minutes, I am just scared all over again. I'm just like, I cannot believe that anyone is actually saying that that is a good idea. It's absolutely ludicrous. Okay. So,
well, again, it's kind of like when we were talking about on the bonus show about religious people taking up that guy who says beat your kid with PVC piping. It's like 99.99% of all parents that do it might not do it to the point where they kill their kids. But then what about that 0.01?
still an important yeah. group to consider, especially considering the size of populations. You know, it doesn't sound like a lot of people, but it adds up.
Yeah,
adds
up. The body count does add up.
Exactly. Okay, today on the show, we're going to be talking about a few subjects. The first one is just a simple question that I want to present out there. And to you, Ryan, I wanted us to chat a bit about it. Does atheism as a movement need to get more organized? And in particular, do we need more fucking money? The second is we're going to be talking about the Milgram experiments. We actually mentioned this on one of our last shows, but we didn't know the name of the experiment, so I felt kind
of
dumb.
There's a couple of different ones that were somewhat similar. That was part of the issue.
We'll be talking more about this and going into how the Milgram experiments talk about our affinity to listen to authority and the religious angle that carries. And finally, we're going to be talking about how exorcism is on the rise. And, of course, the last part, the headlines. We'll have another couple headlines of things that are unusual, disgusting, or weird that we just bring up. Again, like I said, if you enjoy these new sections in the show, let us know. Email me or write comments in the podcast section. Your comments are always appreciated. And you know what? This whole idea of notes, that comes from a fan who wrote in, suggested that we do that. And then, you know what? I listened. So we listen to your suggestions. All right, first up, let's talk a little bit about atheism as a movement. Now, I put up a little thing, a little post a while ago, saying that we need some fucking money as atheists. Not only because the Consider Humanism campaign was just underway, and I mentioned that it was the biggest atheist campaign ever undertook, but it only represents about $200,000 of money, which sounds a lot to people like you and me when you compare it, however, to say how much the Mormons spent trying to pass through Prop 8, which was about $30 million. It gets you to have a bit of a perspective on what the difference in terms of finances are between us and our religious counterparts. So what I wanted to ask is, what do you think, like, because this is what people would have a problem with. They were like, yeah, maybe we need more money in atheism, but what the hell do we do with it? What are we supposed to do? How do we get more organized without becoming the very thing that we rail against?
I don't know. I mean, one of the things that I kind of noticed just from my little foray into the atheist world is that it seems to be like herding cats, and everybody has a different idea about where they want to go and what they think atheism's all about. So, If you were hoping that throwing more money at the problem was more money would just naturally fix all of atheism's problems, the bigger issue is also just the fact that it's so segmented and there's so many people. It represents such a ridiculously diverse group of people. I mean, we're literally brought together simply by a non-belief, practically.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
That creates some problems.
I think that there are certain aspects of atheism that we can say are fairly universal just from how you get there. You know, you get there by basically not just listening to authority blindly, you know, because most of what people believe, they believe because someone told them that it was true, right? You're saying, well, Jesus existed and he's real because it fucking said so, or the Bible said so, or some form of authority has definitively determined that there is a supernatural creator of all things. But for anybody that rejects it, we're like, no, I really don't buy into that. So I would say that there's probably that element of atheists in general. We're probably much more curmudgeon-y than your average believer. The other thing, too, is I would say we've come to, maybe not all of us, but I would say the vast majority of people that I've talked to have at least come to atheism from, say, having a previous belief and having educated themselves and basically abandoned their, you know, their supernatural orientations.
Well,
so there are a few commonalities here.
Yeah, we all grow up. It's like back in the day, we believe in Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny and Jesus. And
wait, they're not real? Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny?
Oh, I'm sorry, man. I didn't know.
God, you didn't know. Now I'm so sad. I think what we should be doing, because, you know, again, we get accused all the fucking time if we try to organize of being no better than religion, right? They're saying, who are you but another religion as you try to organize and spread out your quote-unquote word?
And get money.
And get money, right, exactly. So we're accused of being like religion, which is strange when you think about it, because the accusations come from religious people, which always brings that question saying, well, do you think it's a bad thing? Like, you see, every time they throw it in our faces, it's meant to insult, when you're just like, well, First of all, you're wrong, and second of all, why the fuck is that even an insult to begin with? You should say, oh, well, religions are so awesome, congratulations, welcome to the fold. No, instead they're like, aha, you see, you're just like us. What are you talking about? I think, though, that, I mean, there are lots of ways that people organize themselves that aren't religious. I mean, like the Red Cross is a fucking organization, and there's plenty of other organizations. I think what we should be doing is really focusing narrowly, but having kind of a, trying to have as broad an appeal as possible, like saying, if we want to make people more aware of what atheism is in general, right? Mm-hmm. Just a broad sense of, we want people to question their beliefs fundamentally, because we believe that at least questioning it is a valuable thing for human beings to do. That would be a campaign that I can't think of any atheist that wouldn't want to do that. So maybe the problem that we have is that we really don't have any dynamic fucking campaigns other than saying, well, we're going to put up some bus ads or we're going to do this. I mean, that's part of it. But I just don't feel like there's anyone that's come together with an idea that could appeal to absolutely everybody when it comes to atheism. I don't think that the idea doesn't exist, though. I think the idea is out there. I don't know if I have it.
Well, I mean, I think we're also at the very... It's almost like we're just starting now, because the atheist bus campaign where there is no God, so you might as well just chill out and relax. And then we have consider humanism. And these are the beginnings of... you've got the billboards going up all over America now. It's like this is a growing thing. Atheists are starting to find their voice. They're starting to figure this all out. But it's still baby steps. We're still learning how to do this.
Well, we're going to have a problem if we decide that we're not going to play the same game as organized religion, because organized religions are powerful lobby groups that have voice. And we have to compete with that. As much as we loathe the idea of doing it, I'm like, I'm sorry, but what is the alternative? What do you suggest the alternative is? And we're just going to fucking sit with our thumbs up our asses waiting for everybody to somehow wake up, pop out of their bubble of delusion? I don't think that's the way to go about it.
Well, you know, advertising is all well and good, but the truth of the matter is maybe we ought to consider figuring out some way to start lobbying. I don't know. Figure out some way to get religious people's hands off of science. This seems like a good place to start.
There are small atheist lobby groups, but I mean, I emphasize the word small here. And that's what we are. We're so fucking small fry. It disturbs me. You know, when we have conferences or we hold these kinds of things, and almost everybody is a volunteer. Nobody gets paid. Nothing. And you're just like, what's going on? Most of us that are atheists are actually pretty well educated, pretty well off. I gotta tell you, I'm a little bit surprised and disheartened that we haven't been able to figure this part out. I don't think it's because people aren't generous or aren't willing to fucking donate money, but we're hard-nosed skeptics. We're like, you gotta give me a good fucking reason to give you money, and we haven't done that. I think that we haven't stepped up as atheists to really kind of make people passionate about this.
We haven't fought the kind of battles that atheists would be in support of.
No,
basically.
We fought some milquetoast battles. I think the real real coming attraction is going to be less on the side of accommodationist and more on the side of saying, we're fucking sick and tired of this bullshit. And I don't exactly know what kind of campaign centers around we're sick of your bullshit, but maybe that's just all it is. Really, it's a program called We're Sick of Your Bullshit.
Well, it would be nice if there was, you know, some promotion of reality-based science. I mean, even just beyond standard bullshit like climate change that everybody freaks out about on a regular basis, I mean, how many times do lobbyists go to the government with fake scientific data or that basically tells the government that you should give this company all these advantages? This is happening all the time.
I just feel like we are, I don't know, I guess because of the strange integrity that we have of not wanting to be like religion, we have this tendency to wish to remain unorganized and not united in any particular sort of way. Look, I'm saying that the day comes where we are no longer worried about the influence of religion on our entire sphere of life, then we don't have to organize anymore. We could just be like, live and let live, that's fine. But to some degree, even through our own growing confidence, I think what we've done is that you do create your antithesis sometimes from your mere existence. Like we have helped, and we are going to help, in my opinion, radicalize a certain group of religious people who will see what we do with a tremendous fear, trepidation, maybe even a kind of violent resistance. We see it a little bit every once in a while.
Oh, sure. I mean, how many people, I'm sure we got listeners on the radio show who have put in bumper stickers declaring their atheism or the Darwin fish and have had them destroyed, their cars keyed. Stuff happens all the time.
Right, exactly. So,
and that's just the minimum amount of pushback. What was it? When one of the groups put up a billboard, it got, like, set on fire or something like that. It's like people get uppity.
They are, and I think they will get more uppity because I do think that we really are, we're growing, we're having more influence, and I think that that's going to be really scary to people that would be more drawn to fundamentalism. When you draw the lines, okay, and this is what we're declaring, this is what we're doing. When you draw those lines in the sand, there are some people that will just find themselves at the opposite extremes, and there's really little that you can do about that. The only thing that you have to, that you can do, in a sense, is try to battle them, but as rationally and nonviolently as possible, to not sink to their low, let's say. But to deny their existence, to just think that they're going to casually go away, is a delusion. Okay, the enemies of reason have always been there. Do I need to remind you what happened to the fucking Library of Alexandria around the times that, oh, I don't know, the Christians took power? They burnt that fucking place to the ground. One of the greatest libraries in the history of mankind. So much knowledge that we'll never get back. Torched. The enemies of reason, my friend.
I'm sure it was
for their chance.
I'm sure it was just useless stuff like which, you know, tree leaf is best to wipe your ass with.
This is what you think the Library of Alexandria.
No, just in joking fashion.
Okay. I don't know if you are joking. All right, let's move on. We'll continue to talk about this kind of discussion. We openly invite people to also take part of it because this is not a conclusion. This is just an open forum, an open topic. I want your ideas. Do we need to get more organized? If we do, if we have more money, what should we be using this money for? Let's fucking get some ideas, people.
Yeah, we've been trying to figure out a way of getting more uppity with, with atheist activism. And we're just, you know, starting to poke around that to see what can be done and what can be achieved.
Yeah, we want to take part in it. We want to do some, if anybody has any creative ideas that we could just take, we would take them. But the problem is, of course, this is not an easy question to answer. And it's going to be viewed very differently by different groups. So we have to start by having the discussion. And I think that this is that's an important one. So hopefully you guys listen to the show, want to take part in it. Go to the site. Let's have this fucking discussion. All right, let's move on. The Milgram experiments. This is something we were talking about last show because we were just talking about why people abuse power or how do otherwise moral people commit atrocious acts. And what was really interesting is in the 1960s, there's a guy by the name of Stanley Milgram who decided that he was going to conduct experiments to try to determine why people who have otherwise solid moral foundations do things that are, you know, atrocious. And he uses his and he wanted to understand this because he was inspired by the Nazi war trials. And he wanted to know, like, were all these German people who participated in Hitler's Final Solution evil, or was there something else at play? So he designed a really clever experiment. The experiment was basically there were two subjects. One was an actor, and the other one was a real subject. And the person was told that they were going to take place in an experiment that involved memory of numbers or facts or whatever. And that the one of the person, the student, because it was a student and a teacher, the student would be strapped to a chair and would be receiving electric shocks of increasing intensity to the point where it would be like 450 volts or a lethal dosage of electricity. And what the subject didn't know is that the person who was strapped down to the chair in another room that they couldn't see but with they could still hear was actually just a pre-recording. The person wasn't strapped down and wasn't receiving electric shocks. And the real experiment was to find out how much people would listen to authority. So the scientist, who's played by an actor, tells them that they must continue on with the experiment.
They must electrocute this person.
They must electrocute this person. And the student is always answering wrong, so obviously you start getting to the lethal doses pretty fucking fast. And at first when he proposed the experiment, he asked psychologists what they had determined would be the percentage of people that would actually follow through to death based on just the authority of the scientists. They guessed, I think, 1/110 of the subjects they estimated would do it, when in reality, the majority, like a significant majority of all the people that they tested, and they've done this experiment time and time again, the majority will shock to the death if they are told by someone of authority to do it.
Yeah, very few people will demand to stop.
And it's funny, too, because I was watching some of the videos. There was Darren Brown has a did a version of it. There was also a documentary on violence that redid the experiments,
too.
That
was the French one, right?
No. That one was basically a game show that they had done, the Milgram experiment, except for in the, you know, they wanted to add the extra, there's an audience around, you know, like, now you feel pressure towards it, and there's like a whole prize that you can win and that kind of stuff. So they changed the experiment up a bit. They Hollywoodized it. I don't know if there's much scientific merit in it, but it's pretty fucking awesome. Let's just say that.
It was entertaining, quote-unquote, science.
Well, not all science is really good science, or sometimes the results that you get might not be, you know,
the best. Well, you know, the Milgram experiment in general, to me, is really just one of those, experiments that kind of tells you something about humans that, you know, we take for granted, but, you know, as far as actual data goes and everything else like that, I don't know, it doesn't give us very many firm...
Well, it doesn't give us a really good understanding. I don't think we have generally a good understanding. Maybe science does, but the average individual doesn't really know how they actually would act in given circumstances. We don't have a good concept of just how moral or immoral we actually are as people. We have a better understanding of the morality of others than we do of ourselves. We often consider ourselves to be more moral than the average. Even though we can guess what the average morality is very accurately, because we need to know that, we're always deluded about our own personal sense of morality. We think that we'll act more morally than others. If you don't think that out there, you're the minority. Trust me when I say most people are like, oh, I rate myself an 8 or a 9 in morality, and other people at 7 or 6. You're like, well, you're closer. Your second guess was close. You happen to be like those people. You have... There's nothing special about you, and that's the most disturbing thing, right? I thought what was interesting is when they conducted the experiment, the people who wouldn't do it had some interesting characteristics. And the first characteristics were these were people that were very, very sensitive to other people's pain. Like, there was this one guy who just refused to go on, and then when he's told that he never actually administered the shocks, he actually starts hugging the other guy, the student. Even though he wasn't in a chair and he told them he didn't receive any electric shocks, he still felt the need to comfort this man that he had perceived as having injured. He went pretty far, though, that guy. I think he went up to 400 volts before he finally stopped. Like, one little thing before the lethal dose.
Here's a question for you. Do you think that a lot of people went that high because they have no idea what kind of shock it takes to kill a human being? Because that's my problem.
There is, on the machine itself, it did say that it was deadly at that point. There were clear indications that the shocks
like
were going to be deadly.
It had, like, skull and crossbones on it and everything. Like.
Well, you have to understand, too, is that about halfway through the experiments and the shocks, like, with increasing pain sounds coming from the supposed student, like, just yelling, like, telling, get me out of here! I don't want to do this experiment anymore! Which is probably the most disturbing aspect of the entire experiment, by the way, is that they are aware that the other person no longer wants to be... part of it, but they continue.
He should have thought about that before he accepted the $4 they got paid.
I liked how one person was like, he signed the form, right? He signed it. He signed a liability form, so I'm not responsible. You're like, what are you talking about? Oh, he signed a form, huh? Ergo, I'm not responsible. But that's the whole thing about it. I think this is really what the experiment is all about, is that when given an opportunity for a person to essentially remove any personal responsibility over their actions, when it's either decided by a group or by someone of authority, then we will justify things that we wouldn't normally do. And I think that this makes me think about the scary power of religion, and in particular religious authorities. People who have those kinds of abilities, the ability to tell someone to stone someone else, to kill adulterers, to the mad power that they have to overwrite a person's individual sense of responsibility is enormous.
Don't believe these deaf kids. I never raped them. These are not the droids you're looking for.
It's like a Jedi fucking mind trick. Yeah, no kidding. I think that I wish that there wasn't as much ignorance of this particular experiment, because I know that, I mean, there was some controversy because some people were saying it doesn't necessarily mean that it's something related to authority. There could be something else involved in the experiment. The experiment could be flawed in some way that's not necessarily perceptible. But I actually think that the most important and really the most troubling aspect of it was just how many people didn't seem to be able to stand up to that authority, even when they knew that, like, you could see on their faces there was distress, there was concern, like some people felt sick and ill. They had, when they were told, I mean, you couldn't even imagine the amount of relief they had of not having killed anybody. And after, when they were interviewing people, they were themselves disturbed that they had allowed themselves to be manipulated to that point.
Well, the most important thing, I think, coming out of the Milgram experiments is once you hear about it, it gives you a better understanding of it, and it kind of prepares you. One of the guys that actually went through and did the Milgram experiment at the time came back and told the scientists later, thank you very much for this, because it changed the way that I live my life and perceive things. And when the Vietnam War came up and he was drafted, he was like, I'm going to be a conscientious objector, because I'm not just going to allow authority to tell me I need to go over here and kill these people. Fuck that. And it's a really important lesson that I think a lot of people can learn just from kind of looking into, once you understand what your brain is capable of, that you're just going to accept authority just because it is, you're able to kind of do something about that.
Well, I mean, it's funny that you mentioned that it was the Vietnam War he was drafted, because they used the Milgram experiments to try to understand that whole My Lai massacre. This is a massacre of like a couple hundred villagers that happened in Vietnam from an American battalion who just killed, raped, did all the kinds of things. You're just like, I can't believe that anyone in the American army would be doing something like that to innocents. And then you realize, oh, well, there was a campaign by the military at the time, and this is something that's very common for the military to do, to dehumanize the enemy, because they know that if you dehumanize someone and you convince a person that whoever they're fighting is less than human, they don't have the same rules. You know, the same rules don't apply. It's kind of like the same rule doesn't apply to humans as they apply to pigs, right? You don't eat humans, but you eat plenty of fucking fried pork.
They're delicious.
They are delicious.
They're delicious, intelligent, noble animals.
Those swine, they are undeserving of life.
I don't know if they're more delicious than they are intelligent, but the delicious part is what matters to us.
They could be. But that's what I was trying to say. Like, literally, I think it is important to understand that phenomenon in human behavior, because You can, although maybe you can't stop it entirely, at least awareness of it gives you an advantage.
Absolutely.
That you know that you are susceptible to that, to authority, then you can know that the feelings that you have oftentimes to speak out against it, because it wasn't as though any of those people did it without turning over to the scientist and saying, I can't continue to do this. And of course the scientist says, the experiment requires that you continue. Which was scarily enough to convince most people, but they were objecting to it. It's just that they couldn't take that extra mile and just say, this experiment is fucking over. And that's when you take that personal responsibility onto yourself. You're saying, so what? Somebody told me to do it. Fuck him. I have my own beliefs. I have my own morality. And that's what matters at the end of the day. And I think that that's something that we should learn from the Milgram experiments. Okay, let's move on. Let's talk about our next subject, the rise of exorcism around the world, as new priests and bishops are being trained on exorcism, because there's a growing interest in it. And you might be wondering, where does a growing interest in something as idiotic as exorcisms come from? And that's a really good question, because from the best analysis of even priests, the reason they say that it's on the rise is actually because the church is trying to take a bit of a step back in terms of its rituals. Like, it's going back to doing a Latin mass, for instance. They're moving more towards the conservative, even more supernatural element of their religion. They want people to go back to believing in Satan and demons, and they want people believing in it pretty fucking hard.
I was figuring it might have had to do with, I don't know if this sounds racist or whatever, but with the growing number of
African and Latino Christians?
Just of people from around the world getting in bed with these religions.
Well, it's funny because they actually, that's one of the reasons they did mention as well. They said, well, there's the part of that interest actually comes mostly from Africa and Latin America. And where they say, well, these people are more in tune with spiritual experiences, which is just another way of saying these are superstitious people. And everyone around here recognizes when someone's acting crazy, they're not possessed by a demon. Odds are they require medication or hospitalization. That's the thing that they don't mention about exorcism. That's a funny thing, too. Since 1999, the Vatican has a new rule concerning exorcism that they had to sort of reverse from their 1649 or something like that decision, which basically says that you have to consult a doctor first before you do the exorcism, because it might be just mental illness. So consult a doctor first before you begin to do your rite.
I like that. That's actually kind of cool. Nice of them to admit that.
You know what I thought was funny? Okay, I'm going to read to you the signs of whether or not you're possessed. Okay, because there are five clear signs of whether or not you are being possessed by Satan. Okay, the first sign is an aversion to holy water or to the word God. So if you find yourself being pissed off when a person throws water in your face, or you find yourself uncomfortable when someone keeps saying God all the time, you may be possessed by a devil. Number two, cutting or scratched skin. Do you have cuts or unexplained scratches on your body?
Do you have a teenage daughter?
Who has an eating disorder and likes to cut herself?
And does not like God?
No, well, speaking of that, number three, a lack of appetite. So are they not eating? Is this person not eating and cutting themselves and doesn't like the word God? Number four, speaking in a language that they aren't supposed to be familiar with. Is your daughter or son learning a new language that you're not aware of and speaking in that language? Number five, severe sleeplessness. Does your teenager have problems falling asleep, going to bed at all hours of the night? He may be possessed by a demon. These are pretty much the symptoms. Yeah.
So adolescence is the symptoms of you're possessed by the devil.
It sounds pretty much like these are adolescents. Yeah. The cutting, the lack of sleep.
I do want to say this, though. It's probably better going, like, back in the 60s, it was probably better going for the exorcism than going with the scientific method, which at the time was lobotomy.
Remember the lobotomobile?
I do.
Oh, my goodness. This fucking dude going around in a mobile, giving people lobotomies, like, two at a time.
At physicians' conferences, he used to perform double lobotomies at the same time.
Yeah.
And, like, his whole thing was, look how I can lobotomize two people in under 3 minutes.
He can fundamentally change you forever in under 3 minutes.
Yes.
By doing something as simple as removing brain matter. Oh, who knew that that would stop the whole phobias you're having? Because it totally turned them into vegetables.
Quackery.
It comes in many forms, my friends. Sometimes it's disguised as science.
Many
That's why
times
we call
it's
it
disguised
science.
As science, man. Yeah. What do you think all of that fake medicine is?
Well, they like to call it a science. Indeed. They like to use things like quantum mechanics to explain it, too. That's a really important part of the whole pseudoscience movement. If you can't explain your bullshit piece of crap theory, rely on quantum mechanics. It solves everything.
Makes your bad math add up.
You know what I thought was really funny, too? Because I was reading this one guy who has a book or a movie coming out with Anthony Hopkins about exorcisms. And he was saying that here's what you have to understand about exorcisms. That prayer or the whole rite is not actually, like, the priest doesn't have any powers. He doesn't have magical powers when he performs exorcism. Instead, the magical powers come from Jesus' name and the church. So he wants to be very specific about who has the powers. It's not the priest. He's not magic. That's silly. The magic comes from Jesus' name and the institution of the church.
It flows.
It flows like manna. It flows magically through everyone's veins. And that's where it comes from. So I think
like
that's
it.
Important. Yeah, you know what? In general, I think that, like we said before, I mean, areas in Africa and Latin America much more superstitious. But I also think this is the church trying to go back to its fundamentals. You know, they see that they're losing so many Europeans and Westerners. They just see the numbers dwindling. They figure it's time to get back to old-style religion, man. Let's bring in the fear of the devil. Let's bring in our mysterious, weird fucking ceremonies that we had abandoned because we just thought that it wasn't with the times. We're like, fuck that shit. Let's go two steps back.
I look at it like you got to serve your people and what they want. So it's like if people are asking for the McRib, bring back the McRib.
I don't know if the Catholic Church is really interested in public opinion or polling. They kind of do their own thing. That's
yeah, I know. But when it comes to, you know, the people that follow them saying that they want this and they're willing to pay money for it, then...
Well, it's probably a thriving business, as scary as that is. All right, let's move on to the headlines before we wrap up the show. There was two stories in particular that I thought was... quite fucking hilarious. Evangelical Christians in Brazil have banned the USB, you know, the use of USB devices, claiming that the logo for USB is the mark of the devil. So
I always love that whole mark of the devil and that whole devil gonna put a chip in you. And I always wondered where that comes from, because obviously the Bible is not gonna say, beware ye the microchip under thine skin.
Well, actually, this is the interesting thing. Conservative Christians and conspiracy theorists have a lot that they find in common. Because in Revelations, it talks a lot about kind of a one world government, big brotherism, this type of thing. Because you have to understand, at the time that it was written, Rome was like the big brother, the power. You didn't know of any other power. There was Rome, and then what else was there? Nothing. It's like a gigantic evil empire. So as far as they were concerned, when they were writing when the writer of whoever the fuck wrote Revelation was writing his insane acid trip, it was from the perspective that Rome was like the sole power, and that they were the big brother, and they were the enemy of the church. So think about the way the conspiracy theorists view the New World Order or the Illuminati or, you know, the banks controlling the world, international Jewry. There's plenty in conspiracy theories that appeal to the kinds of, you know, the liturgy that Christianity has, where they're just talking about, like, it's going to be the end of the world soon, you know, their apocryphal fucking craziness. Conspiracy theorists, they feed into that. So I think that for them, the mark of the devil and technology can easily be adapted to a kind of fear and paranoia that the devil has gone 2.0, just as USB has. Here's the funny thing, though. They say that I'll read from the article. According to the founder, the apostle Waldner Solana, or whatever his name is, says that this is just a symbol of Satan. And that it's present in Christian homes. Measures were taken so that all USB connections of his followers were exchanged for common connections, and even Bluetooth, which according to him is permitted, for the blue was the color of the eyes of our Savior Jesus Christ. So Bluetooth is okay, because apparently an ancient Israelite had blue eyes.
How do they know that?
Because that's how their shitty paintings depict him, as a white man with blue eyes. I don't know. There's kind of a weird fascination with Jesus as the really white dude. I think for a large degree, Christianity has basically changed the face of what was a Jewish religion into a Aryan white man living in Palestine at the time. Yeah, that makes sense. He was a white dude. Absolutely. If he existed, Jesus was white as silk.
It's all marketing.
Well, you know. You're gonna. That's the reason why I've always detested the fact that African Americans are generally more religious and believe in Jesus. I'm like, you just took the master's religion. You're praying to a white dude. You should stop that. That's why I love Black Jesus. Have you ever seen fucking Black Jesus?
No.
Oh man, he's awesome. There's like paintings of him all over the place. There's certain groups of African American Christians for whom Jesus is like fucking Afro Black dude. It's pretty wicked. I actually quite like the Black Jesus. Just like in Madonna's video, Like a Prayer. Remember that?
Yep.
Black Jesus. Man, that caused controversy. It's so milquetoast now.
Oh, well, it's so funny because, you know, the song was actually pretty affirmative of, you know, Catholicism. It was just, it was Madonna and she was sexy and it was a black dude and it was the 80s and we didn't know what was going on.
We felt uncomfortable.
Yeah.
This white woman was kissing a black man. That's weird. All right, the next article is a little bit more fucked up, but I know you're going to love it, buddy.
A little bit. Well, I don't know. The evangelicals banning the USB.
It's pretty good?
It's pretty good.
Okay.
I feel bad for anybody who has an MP3 player in that religion.
Yeah, Bluetooth to get your MP3 is going to suck.
It would just mean that you would have to use your phone. And let's just be honest here. MP3 players and phones, maybe the iPhone does it. Perfectly, I don't know.
But the rest of the world does not have an iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
They have not dominated the market as much as Nokia and Samsung. So most people out there have shitty phones.
Hmm.
Okay, the next article is pretty fucked up. It is in Thailand, in a Buddhist temple in Bangkok, they found about 348 fetuses in the morgue there. There was a smell that was starting, and people got pretty freaked out. And they discovered all of these aborted fetuses, presumably that were done in illegal abortions. Because in Thailand, it is mostly illegal to get an abortion unless you're going to die from the pregnancy or unless the baby has severe genetic deformities. But other than that, you can't have one. So what happens? Well, you get the kind of backdoor abortions and fucking dead babies left in bags at a temple. You know, you have to love the pro-life side that just says, let's ban abortion, and then they'll just, even if abortion was banned, they just, dust themselves off and say, mission accomplished.
There will be no more abortions.
They're not going to happen at all.
Just
yeah.
Like nobody smokes marijuana.
And that's right, and no one has premarital sex.
Nope.
Nowhere. It doesn't even happen. All right, well, I think that pretty much wraps up the show. It's nice to finish on the dead fetuses in Bangkok, isn't
it? That was more fucked up than the USB thing.
That was pretty fucked up. Yeah. But before we go, there's a secret word, actually, because here's the deal. There's a contest that I put on Twitter for anybody that the first person that tells me what the secret word is gets a free membership. So the word of today, and this is going to be one of those, hey, this word will teach you something, is exegesis. All right, that's the word of the day. Do you know what exegesis means?
I seem to remember being used in a Muse song.
Okay, well, exegesis is a critical examination of religious or sacred text, ranging from historical research of the origins of the text or even the backgrounds of the authors. So that's what exegesis is.
I didn't quite understand that because it just sounded like you were reading a dictionary definition.
No, this is not the dictionary definition. This is an amalgam of the long description of... Because the dictionary definition is actually pretty long. Because exegesis, believe it or not, is very complicated. There's lots of ways that people examine nonsense, apparently.
So how do people take that word and turn it into a membership for themselves?
Well, if they send me an email or even a tweet with the secret word, exegesis, then the first person to do that gets a free membership for the bonus shows. Cool. It's for the hardcore people, the ones that fucking press play right away, the ones that listen to us like as soon as it goes up.
Mm-hmm.
Let's reward these people. Let's reward the ones that are clever enough to use email or Twitter. So, and I thought it'd be fun at least every once in a while when I have a contest like that. This is still me testing contests, but I thought when you include a word that actually helps a person in terms of their own vocabulary, their religious vocabulary specifically, I think that's cool. You don't agree?
Sure.
Yeah.
I'll tell you the truth. It's not the most useful word.
Well, shut your fucking mouth. To some people that listen to the show, it is, man. It is the most useful word of the fucking day.
Gets them a membership.
For the rest of you that don't actually win the contest, we'd like to offer you our bonus membership. It's $20 a year, and you get access to all our old bonus shows. You get the new shows, and what's cool is that coming up pretty soon, there's going to be a new feed that'll have higher quality versions of both audio files. So if you're a bonus member, you don't need to worry about all two different feeds. It'll be one amalgamated feed with the higher quality versions of the shows. Plus, on these kinds of shows, the normal shows, there'll actually be bonus material at the end as well. So more bonus stuff, throwing it in. I'm enticing you, trying to get your money. And hopefully that works. All right, we'll catch everybody else on the Thursday show. Until then, I'd like to thank again all of our patrons, and I'm going to be posting photos of my latest mustache adventure in Movember, the fight to help sequence the genome of prostate cancer. Fucking exciting shit. So go to the site, check it out, and if you feel generous, donate. With that, my name is Jacob Forte.
I'm Ryan Harkness.
Have a good Atheist Day, everybody.